Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. I'm joined by Senator Ron Wyden, whose name is so iconic in Oregon that he really needs no introduction. But just in case you didn't know, Ron Wyden was first elected to Congress in 1981 as a Democrat serving in the House of Representatives until 1996, when he switched houses in Congress and became a senator. He has served as one of Oregon's two senators ever since. And if you're counting, he spent more than 43 years in Congress, and now he's written a book titled Hookspaw, How to Fight Fearlessly for Progressive Change. Welcome to the Exchange, Senator.
Thanks for having me, folks.
So I'm guessing, Senator, given the current political climate, that the entire Democratic Party has already ordered your book.
Well, I hope so. I mean, we got to have some real chutzpah. Chutzpah is about grit, being about bold. It's about taking on the odds. I mean, for example, we're looking at a tax bill that, in effect, gives a tremendous array of breaks to the people at the top, and it would be paid for by cutting Medicaid and hunger programs. We're going to need to take on these special interests and make sure that working families and seniors and kids are going to get a fair shake.
Well, you start the book juxtaposing the January 6th insurrection attempt with another date, November 18, 2022. What's the significance of that date?
I'm very concerned in terms of women's rights and certainly what happened on January 6th. I mean, we've got big, big challenges. For example, I was the first in the Congress to look at mifepristone and making sure that women could have a non-surgical alternative to abortion. And after a big win, we exposed Jesse Helms and others. Now we're continuing to have to fight now. So these battles are not linear. They don't go just from one point to another, and that's what we're talking about in the first chapter.
Well, you called November 18, 2022 a coup. Why?
Well, I mean, what you see are these far-right groups and Mr. Kaczmarek and others basically figuring out how to hotwire solutions through the courts and political processes, and that's why I'm so concerned at waking people up and saying, let's use our chutzpah. We've all got some of it. I give some specific examples on how to do it.
Do you feel that November 18, 2022 is on par with January 6th?
I think that both of them were enormously important events for the country. And that's why I led with both of them.
Well, I want you to read an excerpt from the opening and we'll discuss it. Can you read the first excerpt?
Yeah. My name is Ron Wyden. I'm Oregon's senior senator after 43 years in Congress. I'm the second most senior Democrat in the United States Senate. I chair one of the federal government's most powerful bodies. Now I'm the ranking Democrat, so we correct the record, which oversees taxes, trade, and tariffs, Social Security, and Medicare, and health policy, and the overall economic well-being of the United States are also under our jurisdiction. I've written laws that injected $1 trillion in new wealth into the global economy, improved Americans' access to quality health care, stopped malfeasant insurance companies from abusing the elderly, and begun the overdue process of reversing deadly climate change. I'm the ultimate insider. My name is Ron Wyden. I'm a child of immigrants. At the ripe age of 25, I was one of the first full-time activists for senior citizens in the United States. By 27, I was among the nation's youngest authorities on Medicare. I got to Congress by defeating an entrenched, disengaged incumbent in my own party 38 years before another determined young insurgent known as AOC did the same. Uncommon feat. If I can do it and she can do it, you can do it. I'm the consummate outsider.
Wow. Senator, today there are a lot more young progressive leaders in Congress than ever before. And for the first time in history, voters were given a choice between a Black Asian woman candidate with an unimpeachable resume versus a candidate who has been twice impeached, and you know the result. So what hope do you offer young progressives who have serious concerns about whether the dominant culture in America can really be persuaded to adopt a vision of a more diverse, equitable, and inclusive America for future generations?
My message to those young progressives is that political change hardly ever is top-down. It's really almost always grassroots up. And I think we've got a tremendous opportunity now to find the new ideas, the new organizing opportunities, and build a tremendous coalition between young people and others across the age spectrum. And I think this is a great time, particularly in Oregon, for those young people to come forward.
Well, Senator, when we look at the data from the last election and previous elections before that, we see that a majority of all non-white populations are voting for progressive policies and progressive candidates, yet a majority of white voters only are still voting for the conservative candidates and causes. How can progressives persuade a majority of white voters to be more aligned with a more diverse, equitable, and inclusive America?
I think there's some ideal issues to expose Trump on and bring over some of those older white voters you're talking about. For example, Donald Trump repeatedly claimed in the campaign that he was going to lower food prices. He would talk about grocery stores. He said, I'm going to lower your grocery prices. A couple of weeks after the election, he basically put up the white flag of surrender and indicated that he wouldn't even try to do anything about that issue. A lot of those older white voters that you're talking about really feel like they get clobbered just trying to go to the grocery store, and Trump just gave up after he made him a hard promise that he was going to do something to help him out.
My guest is Senator Ron Wyden. He spent more than 43 years representing Oregon in Congress and has now written a book titled Chutzpah, How to Fight Fearlessly for Progressive Change. Senator, can you read a second passage from your book?
I can. This is a book about how I've shown up every day, played the long game, and learned some important lessons about defying convention, disavowing received wisdom, upending old dictums, and charting new pathways that can contribute to better lives. And it's a book about helping you do exactly the same thing across every dimension of your own life to make your school, your workplace, your volunteer organizations, your community, and our nation a more elevated and effective place using the same tool, the only tool really that I've had at my disposal through my 52 years in public life, chutzpah.
So, Senator, what does chutzpah mean? You offer 12 rules. What are they?
Well, a couple of them would be you have to be willing to play the long game. You know, so much of life today, particularly with all of the technology, means everybody feels that they've got to make a decision to get back to somebody within like 5 minutes or something like that. What I've shown, for example, with respect to climate change, I wrote the law that was the biggest investment in fighting climate change in American history. This is the $400 billion in clean energy tax credits, and saying for the first time, the more you reduce carbon, the bigger your tax savings. So what I tried to do is take these examples that I thought took everybody's natural chutzpah, we all have some of them, and it gave them a chance to pick up on how they could take advantage of some of what I've learned. For example, when I exposed the tobacco lobby, you know, the tobacco lobby was peddling all of these products that made people sick, and they were lying to the American people, and I exposed it in a congressional hearing. I took advantage of an unexpected moment. I went to a hearing. I was a young member of Congress. I thought the hearing was basically over, and at the last minute, I turned to the staff, and I said, has anybody asked about these executives lying to the American people, lying to the American people about the addictiveness of nicotine? And they all looked at me just stunned that I had come up with this. I asked a question. It was instrumental to our getting a settlement within a few years of hundreds of billions of dollars in order to help people who are suffering from tobacco-related illnesses.
Well, Senator, when you ask the American people about Congress and trust, when you speak of lying, the American people, for the most part, have a very cynical view of Congress and politicians in general. They think they all lie. Is that true?
No question about it. And on top of it, you know, we're 3,000 miles away from Washington, D.C. in southern Oregon. And for all practical purposes, Washington, D.C. might as well be Mars for all the connection a lot of people feel with D.C. That's why I'm doing something that had never been done in the history of Oregon government. I have open to all town hall meetings in every county every year. I think I'm now on number 1103. And I think by being accessible and saying, I'm not going to give any speeches, I'm just here to get your questions and give you any input that you're seeking, I think I chip away a bit at the cynicism. But I'm not disagreeing with your premise. I think that a lot of people think that the government really is not on the level. And what I've tried to do in my time in public service is be as open and transparent as I possibly can. And apropos of accountability, nobody in Oregon government history had ever done what I did after winning the first Senate seat in 30 years.
Well, you've been pretty successful, and the town halls are a way to reach your constituents. And when you do it, what do you hear?
What I hear a lot about is people's hopes to get ahead, particularly economically. They want to know how to get a good paying job, and if they work hard, how to be in a position to pay the rent, buy groceries, get their health care, and maybe once in a while be able to go on a trip to the Oregon coast for a little vacation. And usually the second word in any topic is bill. It might be rent bill, it might be medical bill, it might be energy bill, but a lot of folks are still coming out of, you know, the COVID years and higher inflation, and they're trying to make ends meet.
Well, your book is about fighting fearlessly for progressive change. What is progressive change?
Well, progressive change is about making progress. And what we're seeing is Donald Trump turning back the clock and going in exactly the opposite direction from progress. I gave you the example we talked about in the first chapter about mifepristone, because that was a huge development. I took on Jesse Helms and the far right because we saw so many women, you know, suffering in terms of reproductive, health care. And I wanted a non-surgical alternative to abortion, and I led the fight to get it. And here we are, because politics isn't linear, as I said, we're still fighting the battle, and we're going to win because science is going to triumph over politics.
Well, I hope you're right, but what is the other side fighting for? What's the America they envision?
Well, unfortunately, they are advocating an America that is more divisive. You look, for example, at immigration. My parents fled the Nazis in the 30s, not all got out. My dad was in the U.S. Army. He was one of the famous Ritchie boys, the decorated Ritchie boys who wrote the propaganda pamphlets that they dropped on the Nazis, telling them to give up and to protect our troops. And, you know, I think this country is better and freer because of legal immigration. And the Trump people clearly are going out of their way to pit one group against another in this immigration debate. And it comes up often at town hall meetings. And usually when the decibel level goes up very high, I ask the audience, might be a couple hundred people there, how many of you are Native Americans? And usually there are just a handful of hands that go up. And when that's the case, I point out that means that most of you, because you didn't raise your hands, you're not Native Americans, are connected to the immigrant experience in America. And that tends to be a bit more unifying, and the Trump people are trying to create the kind of anger and polarization that keeps us from moving ahead as a country.
Well, it sounds a bit ironic that immigrants from Europe are now passing laws and trying to illegalize humans who are immigrating from America, South and Central.
Well, ironically, when I bring this up at a town hall meeting after I ask, how many of you are Native Americans, and only a handful of hands go up, a lot of them kind of say to each other, well, I guess I am an immigrant. There's Uncle Paul or, you know, Aunt Sally or something. So I like to think we're chipping away at it. You know, the question of playing the long game is something that I think is part of showing real chutzpah, because you don't get all the solutions you want in half an hour. You sometimes have to play the long game, and that's what I did in healthcare and climate.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Senator Ron Wyden. He spent more than 43 years in Congress representing Oregon and has now written a book titled Chutzpah, How to Fight Fearlessly for Progressive Change. Senator, just before the break, you were talking about immigration and the laws against immigration being passed by immigrants. When you go to your town halls, you ask the question, who here is a Native American? And the rest of those people who do not raise their hands are all immigrants. So the question of immigration is huge in this country and always has been, right?
And I like to think, Mike, if I could explain it this way, that I know by asking that question, I am not going to resolve the immigration, you know, debate in America. But I also know that it prompts people to think a bit more about it. And in many instances, they walk away and say, you know, we're part of the immigrant experience as well. And they start to factor it into their judgments. It is not going to be a panacea, but it's part, again, of playing the long game for real reform and making life in Oregon better.
Well, Senator, before the break, we had you read a couple of excerpts from your book. I'd like you to read one more.
Excerpt 3 that I believe you're interested in is the second reason I'm writing this book. It's to show the link between the Jewish American experience in the 20th and 21st centuries and the principles that underpin American democracy. These have been central to my life for all of my 75 years, a life that would not have been if my parents had not fled Nazi Germany in the 1930s and been welcomed as refugees into the United States. There are two Jewish concepts in particular on which I focus. One is cultural and one is rooted in ancient liturgy, both of which I've already referenced. The cultural concept, of course, is chutzpah, which to me is shorthand for the individual self-confident, against the odds embrace of the possible. True, you need your voice, its amplifiers, and its echoes. As my mother, all Jewish mothers in the 1940s and 50s and 60s used to say, you've got a mouth, use it. But success, fully applied chutzpah, requires other ingredients, notably ideas, people, process, and goals. Particularly the second Jewish concept, the religious goal of tikkun olam, which literally means to repair the world. Tikkun olam is the reason you see Jews, although less than 3% of the U.S. population, were fully represented in the leadership of civic organizations, NGOs, the law, and journalism. Our religion requires us to be worldly and engaged. We are raised to want to make things better. Without a sense of tikkun olam, you just don't have chutzpah.
So, Senator, if your goal is to repair our society, does that mean it is currently in a state of brokenness?
It means that there's a lot of room for improvement. Let me give you an example in my life, and it's in the book. When I was growing up, all I wanted to do was to play in the NBA, and I just dribbled all day long. I discussed the despair of my parents, and I finally got a scholarship to Cal at Santa Barbara, and I sat on the bench, and now my career is mostly known for the fact that I got a scholarship offer from Gonzaga. Now, if I'd gone to Gonzaga, I would have sat on the bench even more than I did at Cal at Santa Barbara. But I could have shown forever that a Jewish kid could play with the Jesuits. So basketball didn't really work out. But I had another opportunity to pursue how I might help repair the world, and that was to work with senior citizens. And Wayne Morris, our late senator, got me interested in the subject. And back then, Mike, if a town had a lunch program for senior citizens. That was considered a really big deal. And I had a chance to be the co-director of the Oregon Gray Panthers. We stopped ripoffs in health insurance sold to seniors, fought to lower the cost of prescription medicine, which has been an ongoing battle. Back then, we were getting generic medicine available, which helped to lower the cost a little bit. And all of it was in the name of helping to perfect the world and make it a little bit better on my watch.
Well, Senator, we're told that we live in the greatest nation on earth. Both President Biden and President Trump have repeated that mantra. Biden says we are a great nation, and Trump says we were a great nation at some undeclared point in the past, and he wants to make America great again. You're telling us in your book that your fight is to repair America.
I'm really saying, Mike, we've got a lot to do. I continue to believe that America is a very special place. And the reality is, I often say this to one of my town hall meetings when people get very frustrated and the like. I said, look, there's a lot we've got to do. We've been here for 90 minutes talking about issues. Let's just remember two things. In much of the world, you can't even have an open to all town hall meeting to take questions. You know, the forces in charge, you know, won't let that kind of freedom ring. And number two, I say, just remember, all over the world, people want to come here. And hardly anybody from here wants to go there. That's my view about our country.
My guest is Senator Ron Wyden. He spent more than 43 years representing Oregon in Congress and has now written a book titled Chutzpah, How to Fight Fearlessly for Progressive Change. So, Senator, in the chapter titled Productive Noise, you declare that the deep state doesn't exist. What is the deep state that we hear so much about, and why did you write that it doesn't exist?
Well, you know, the deep state is used in a negative way, you know, very often by those who really don't want the kind of transparency and accountability that really is necessary for our country to make progress. I know that, you know, Donald Trump has long said that the biggest problem is the deep state. There are people who, you know, are diabolical in nature and just doing nothing except causing great damage to our society. I mean, I think we all understand that there are serious challenges and we need more transparency and more accountability in government. But the idea that every person is part of this diabolical kind of process, I think, is not fair to the millions of Americans who are working hard, playing by the rules, raising their families, and doing the right thing. I want to give them more opportunities. And I think if we all decide to be bolder and step up, we can do great things. And I'm sure we're getting close to the end, but let me give you an Oregon example of a person who really used his chutzpah, and that is Steve Prefontaine, the legendary runner from the south coast of Oregon. He wanted to be an athlete as he was growing up. People thought he was too small and not tall enough and strong enough, and he basically wasn't going to be able to be a great, you know, athlete, which is what he wanted. He had real chutzpah, and he decided that was just a bunch of baloney to tell him that he couldn't be a great athlete. And he became the face of American distance running. And everybody has who's interested in this has seen the movies. When you go to the stadium in Eugene, you see all of the memorabilia associated with Steve Prefontaine. He is a Oregon Way example of a young person who people were counting out. He wasn't going to be able to get what he wanted. And he said, hell no. He said, I'm going to do better. I'm going to make a difference. You know, when young people were concerned about drugs, they would talk to Pre about it. And he said, I get high on running. And he would get more young people involved in sports. So Oregon has a real historical example of a young person who showed great chutzpah. And when you walk into the incredible tax stadium in Lane County, think about the fact that it probably wouldn't have been there without Pre.
Well, speaking of long-distance running, you write about the long game. What is it?
Well, the long game is a pretty good example of what I was dealing with in terms of climate change. We had 50 years of gridlock on climate as it got hotter and we had weather problems and the like, and there was no legislation passed to deal with it, no cap and trade, which was to use marketplace forces, no price on carbon, no regulatory incentives. And in 2010, a cap and trade bill passed the House, and it died in the Senate without even a hearing. So I decided to look carefully at all of the possibilities, and I found that billions of dollars were being spent on energy issues in the tax code. And I said, this is a mess. A lot of it doesn't have the shelf life much longer than a carton of eggs. And I said, I'm going to use the tax code to create the first ever concrete incentive for solar and wind and battery development and geothermal. I got it passed. It generated hundreds of billions of dollars of private investment in fighting climate change. And now we have a real battle with Donald Trump, who apparently is not supportive of this and wants to get rid of it. And just today, I voted against several energy nominees because I thought they would not be able to fend off the Trump effort to cut the program.
So they're playing the long game, too.
They're playing the long game, but ironically, they come to the debate without any alternative other than just saying there ought to be more fossil fuels, and that didn't do a whole lot to help us as it relates to some of these challenges we're having now.
Senator, you have a chapter titled Crying with a Purpose. Why is crying with a purpose important?
Well, I want people to understand that they can make a difference, and their passions and their views really help to mobilize, you know, people, and that's what's behind that.
So what do you hope readers will take away from your book?
What I hope readers will say is, I learned something about chutzpah, this incredible instrument for making the world a better place. And I've already had some amazing reactions. A week or so ago, a young person came up to me and said, hey, Senator, I heard you were a basketball player. You weren't too bad back in the day. And I said, yeah, it was okay. I got a scholarship. And he goes, well, I want to hear more about your book, this chutzpah. Does it have anything to do with hoopspah? Because he thought apparently it was going to be also a basketball book. And I guess it is. But what I want to do is to tell a story about how I had a big dream. I wanted to play in the NBA. It wasn't possible for the reasons that I outlined. But because of chutzpah, this wonderful instrument that encourages you to push ahead and fight the odds, when I couldn't play in the National Basketball Association, I was able to, with the help of a lot of friends I acknowledge at the end of the book, to get a path to public service. And for that, I'm very, very grateful to the people of Oregon, who took in a young guy. I'd never run for anything before. The senior citizens gave me an opportunity to be in public service, and Oregonians have been very, very good to the Wyden family, and for that, I'm grateful.
Senator, you've been fighting for an America that you envisioned for a very long time, and now you have a political climate and an administration that has a very different vision of America. Can you juxtapose the two?
You know, we have this wonderful thing known as elections, and we're already beginning to show that we're going to stand up for what people really care about. You asked about the older voters, and I mentioned the food prices. You know, Donald Trump trumpets a specific contribution that he was going to make if he was elected, and that was he was going to lower prices on your groceries in the stores that you depend on. And now he just has immediately walked away. So we're going to take those kinds of messages to voters and say, you know, we are showing that not only are we going to say we oppose a bad idea, which is like, you know, walking away from the food battle, but we've got ideas, for example, like the antitrust laws. I led the fight on the Kroger-Albertson, you know, merger. If that had gone through, that would have been the biggest food merger in American history, and that wouldn't have been any good for helping to lower food prices. So we say what we're not for. I just gave you an example of the Trump retreat from even trying to do something on food prices to what we're trying to do, which is dust off the antitrust laws to lower prices.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have, Senator. Thank you for your decades of dutiful service and joining me today to discuss your new book.
Mike, thanks so much. Look forward to being home and having some town hall meetings in Southern Oregon. Appreciate your interest.
My guest was Senator Ron Wyden. He spent more than 43 years representing Oregon in Congress and has now written a new book titled Chutzpah, How to Fight Fearlessly for progressive change. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.